Nick Flynn is a poet who has won prizes for work such as this poem called Father Outside, which begins,
"A black river flows down the center of each page, and on either side the banks are wrapped in snow. My father is ink falling in tiny blossoms, a bottle wrapped in a paper bag. I want to believe that if I get the story right, we will rise, newly formed, that I will stand over him again as he sleeps outside under the church halogen. Only this time I will know what to say."
All of his life, Nick Flynn found himself at a loss for words when it came to his own father, at first because his father wasn't there. Jonathan Flynn abandoned his family when Nick was just two. Nick's mother struggled to raise two kids in a small fishing village south of Boston and ultimately committed suicide. Jonathan Flynn, Nick Flynn's father, spent or misspent his life telling tall tales, charming women, drinking too much, making the occasional foray into serious criminality, slipping steadily downwards, all the while scribbling away on what Jonathan Flynn imagined was a great American novel. In his new memoir, the son, Nick Flynn, writes that as a young man in 1987, he too was adrift, drinking, managing to pay the rent with a job working with homeless men, and suddenly, his father reappeared in his life.
Well, he called me. I was living in Boston. I was working with the homeless. We were both living in Boston. He was across town. He probably wasn't a 10-minute walk from me, but we hadn't had any contact. And I got a call one day that he was getting evicted from his rooming house.
Now, a call, by the way, you hadn't heard his voice on the phone. You'd not talked to him, right?
No, we really hadn't any contact. We knew where each other were. We knew each of us knew where the other was. And he had been sending me letters for about 10 years before that. So I knew him through his letters. He began writing me letters when he was in federal prison for bank robbery. So this is 10 years later, and he's been driving a cab for these 10 years and sort of living marginally. He was in his late 50s. So he called me and told me to come over with my truck and to get his stuff. And so I went, actually. I'm not really sure why I went exactly. This is the one time he ever called me on the phone, so it seemed like I should, you know, just go and just out of curiosity, just check it out, if nothing else. So I went and knocked on his door, and he called for me to come in, and I pushed the door open, and he was bathing in the middle of his room in a tin tub that he had filled, and he was drinking vodka out of a silver chalice. And as I walked in, he stood up, and he stood before me naked with water dripping off of him and welcomed me, said it was good to see me. You know, it was a mythic sight, you know, the father rising from the water and, you know, rising drunken from the water, offering me vodka. And then, you know, I staggered back in the hallway and, you know, waited until he got, you know, some clothes on, and then went back in, and we talked for maybe half an hour, and then I gave him some money to put his stuff in storage or to get another apartment, and I just asked him not to show up at the shelter that I worked in, because I didn't want it to interfere with my job. I was really hoping that he would just sort of move on to the next apartment.
But ultimately, he did end up in your shelter.
Yeah. About 2 months later, he ran out of options. You know, there's progression to, you know, generally to homelessness, sort of steps you go. And he went down those steps, and finally ended up, you know, with really no other options. I really didn't know what to make of it, really, when he showed up there. You know, like, he very gregariously identified me as his son. From the first moment he walked in the door, he sort of loudly announced that his son worked at the shelter and that I promised him a bed or something.
And must have been great for you.
Yeah, most of the people didn't really believe he was my father. They didn't really, just the way he is, you know, you don't always believe what he says because it seems so outlandish. So things changed at that moment. I mean, forever. I sort of got to go through the whole range of emotions one probably goes through, you know, in any relationship with their father, wondering, questioning who they are and getting to know and then being, you know, disappointed and then, you know, having hope. And I just had to go through them maybe in a condensed version, you know, and in public also.
You describe your father while he's in prison at one point. Your father was thinking, as you imagined it, I will write one word after another and then follow them like a rope out of my cell. Do you think the words would have saved him had he actually managed to be a writer the way you are?
I'm not sure if, you know, whether words do save us, whether, you know, art saves us, or it's the things that we have to do in our lives that allow us to write those words. You know, in order to sort of create something, you sort of have to make your life in such a way that you can create them, make the conditions. You know, if he had written a book, it's one thing, but if he had, you know, and he has written a book. He actually does have a first draft of a novel that he wrote. And it begins actually with a lot of promise. The first 30 pages are the writing is strong, and it's interesting and daring and experimental. And then after about 30 pages, it sort of dissipates into incoherence, which is almost a metaphor for his life.
Well, you know, at the very end, when you show your father your own book of poetry, he's really puffed up, sort of proud, but takes it as he seems to everything as part of him. And in fact, he says it's an inherited quality.
Yeah, he went.
If you didn't write, he says, I'd be surprised.
At that point, I already had a relationship with him. I developed this relationship with him. My father got off the streets after 5 years and moved into an apartment in Boston. I now, you know, when I go to Boston, I go and see him. We have a what you call a normal relationship. You go visit your parents. But so I showed him the book, and his reaction was, like you said, it was instantly sort of claimed ownership. There was a moment of pain, though, also. He sort of recognized that, you know, I had done something that, you know, his whole life was based upon getting his book published, and here I had done it. And he was sort of mystified by it also. He just, he couldn't understand, he couldn't really comprehend how I had done it. It was a very poignant moment, really.
These moments are still but flashes in his father's daily struggle with drink, says Nick Flynn. And though Jonathan Flynn is in subsidized housing now, his life continues to be precarious. Nick Flynn says he took the title of his new memoir from his father's favorite and very crude description of being homeless, another BS night in Suck City. Here, Nick Flynn reads the final words of his poem, Father Outside.
From my roof, I can see the East River. It looks blackened with oil, but it's only the light. Even now, my father is asleep somewhere. If I followed the river north, I could still reach him.